From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, and we're talking once again about COVID-19, the pandemic that has been wreaking havoc across different parts of the world at different times over the last year plus. In our area, vaccinations widely available, a lot of people starting to get those. And so we're going to talk to some area experts about just how that process is going and the ongoing impact of COVID-19 now that some of the restrictions in our country and in specifically in our state are starting to be lifted. Joining me are four guests. Let me introduce them to you. First, we've got Megan Meller, an infection preventionist at Gunderson Health System. Megan, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Aaron Morcombe is a family practice physician at Mayo Clinic Health System. Dr. Morcombe, thank you very much for being here.
Happy to be here.
Kayla Baer is a public information officer for Trempealeau County Health Department. Kayla, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
And from just across the river from me in Houston County, Minnesota, we have John Puglisa, the Director of Public Health and Human Services for Houston County. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for letting me participate today.
Absolutely. And so COVID-19 has been the topic of many of our programs over the last year and probably 2 or 3 months now. And we've seen highs and lows in terms of infection rates, in terms of hospitalization rates. We've gone through a period, at least in La Crosse County, of seeing deaths, which at one point were, you know, more frequent. We've seen that nearly eliminated, basically, from the conversation at this point. And so that's good to see. Let me start with Megan from Gunderson Health System, talking about just sort of the extent of COVID-19 in our community. Where do we stand right now in the La Crosse area?
Right now, we're definitely seeing a slow number of cases. This has kind of been the trend for the past couple of weeks. Where we are really seeing cases is with the school age population. So I would say like the preteens, the teenagers, so like the 12, 13, 14 year old groups, oftentimes associated with extracurricular activities at school. We're still seeing periodic cases among, older individuals. And for the most part, it's among people who haven't been vaccinated. We have a couple of breakthrough vaccination COVID cases of people who are vaccinated, but the majority of cases haven't been vaccinated. So it's a good trend to see the number of cases going down and staying down.
We have seen over the last year or so a lot of attention paid to the very excellent and sacrificial work done by Megan, people in your profession, people in our hospitals and clinics, first responders and others who really have stood in harm's way on behalf of all of us. With the numbers declining, are those hospital staff, clinic staff, medical professionals, other first responders, are they starting to see some relief and a return to a more sane kind of work environment that they're able to deal with better?
We definitely are. I know I always get that question too. Are things back to normal? And there really is, it's like a new normal. We actually just had an infection control statewide conference, and that's the title of the conference is The New Normal. Things have shifted so much within the infection control world. People are much, even within the hospital, people are much more aware of the need to be up to date on their training, infection control trainings. But there is a relief. There's this sigh of relief of, yes, we can gather again, with friends outside of work, we can go to happy hours, we're vaccinated. So yes, it's a significant mood booster when you can feel, that sense of, that high vaccination status within a group.
That's Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System. Dr. Aaron Morcombe is with Mayo Clinic Health System. Dr. Morcombe, what about at Mayo? I know you've been vaccinating people for quite a while now, and there was at first, you could hardly get an appointment to get a vaccination. And now at different opportunities in the area, I've seen even walk-up availability of vaccination. What is that availability looking like right now?
So you're absolutely correct. In the beginning, we were really limiting it to the highest risk people. And now we almost have a surplus of it. Anyone can get the vaccine, which is really encouraging. I will say in the beginning, everybody who really wanted to get a vaccine were really motivated to get in and get it, not just here at our facility, but at other places where it was available, Walgreens, which was excellent. People should just get it wherever they can get it. And now we're really running into trying to convince the people that are a bit more hesitant or have a little bit more questions about the vaccine and trying to really get that population to sign on to getting vaccinated. We do have walk-in appointments. So if you are seen by a primary care provider here at Mayo, or even if you are not a patient of Mayo Clinic Health System, but interested in getting a vaccine, we are able to vaccinate anyone. So if interested, we definitely have availability and can get you in as soon as possible.
John Puglisa is the Health and Human Services Director in Houston County, Minnesota. John, what about regulations in Minnesota at the moment? I know in Wisconsin, we're seeing a lot of these restrictions lifted, some being lifted early by court order and others being lifted now that the CDC's guidance has changed significantly. What's the status in Minnesota?
Well, our governor recently kind of aligned Minnesota guidance with CDC guidance. So late last week, the statewide mask mandate was lifted in accordance with that CDC guidance. Again, a lot of that guidance is directed at folks who have their post 2 weeks of their being fully vaccinated. But in the state of Minnesota, that mask mandate has been lifted for all, and encouragement to those who have not gotten vaccinated that they seek out a vaccination or continue to use face coverings and social distance and other mitigation efforts prior to getting a vaccination.
Have you had any challenges? I know you're so close to the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I know traffic goes both ways across those bridges between Wisconsin and Minnesota in terms of people living on one side of the river, working on the other side of the river, those kinds of things, or visiting family or friends in either location. Have you had any difficulty, or what's that been like as each state or each community, each county has its own differences over the last year or so with how things have been enforced? Have you had any difficulty or situations come out of that?
No, I think we've had some challenges, but also some opportunities. We've been really grateful for our partnership with Mayo and Gundersen Health Systems across the river. La Crosse County has been a great partner with us. Houston County is a smaller county on the other side of the river. We don't have a primary care provider within the county. The vast majority of our residents go across the river to seek medical attention. And so, you know, we've got a long-standing relationship with those partners, and we're grateful for that. But I think just the mechanics of information, like if somebody goes and gets a COVID test, a resident of Minnesota from Houston County goes to a place in La Crosse, that information is reported to the Wisconsin Department of Health, that then reports it to the Minnesota Department of Health, that then it comes to us. And so, you know, one of the takeaways from this, I think, for us as we have conversations with our state health folks is we need to think about how that flow of information is, because back when really we didn't have any vaccine efforts and our efforts were focused primarily on case investigation and contact tracing, that posed all sorts of challenges and sometimes issues with people not trusting our credibility because they knew certain things as far as positive cases or even fatalities long before we were able to verify those things. So availability of testing at times has been difficult. But again, one of the things that's been heartening throughout this whole thing is to see how partnerships that have been developed over time have been strengthened. And we're grateful for our friends in La Crosse County and in Mayo and Gundersen Health Systems.
That's John Puglisa from the Houston County, Minnesota Health and Human Services Department. Kayla Baer is with Trempealeau County. Kayla, talk about Trempealeau County and the the effect of COVID-19 in that area currently? What's the situation like in terms of caseload and that sort of thing in your county?
So similar to what Megan was saying about cases decreasing, we've seen a pretty drastic decrease in cases in Trumbull County, which is very positive. So I just looked at where we're at for today, and we only had one new case. So things are looking a lot more similar to the beginning of the pandemic when it was just trickling in here and there. Our case rate has remained very low as well, which is also really good to see. We are working really hard to encourage as many people as possible to get the vaccine. Working with school districts to provide the vaccine on site to those children who became eligible last week, and also working with our local health systems to promote those vaccine clinics as well. We're exploring some ways to maybe reach people at fairs this summer. We've got a lot of those coming up. I know our county is looking forward to getting back to some of those events that were really missed last summer. So the more people we can get vaccinated, the more successful those types of events will be, and the less spread of COVID-19 there will be. So again, we're just really focusing right now on encouraging people to get the vaccine and providing that information repeatedly, so that way there's a reliable source of information for the residents of Trumbull County.
So looking back over the pandemic and your county and your area's response to it and the effect and everything like that, what's been one of the big challenges that you've had to face as a result of the pandemic, maybe even during the more difficult months? What challenge did you face that maybe you didn't anticipate?
One of our biggest challenges has been reaching, and we're still still dealing with this challenge, has been reaching the Hispanic population. Regardless of the relationships that we've built and the connections that we have with people, it's still a population that, I mean, our department isn't made up of 100% Hispanic people, and so it can be difficult to really get into that population and meet them where they're at with their ideas and thoughts about COVID-19 and about the vaccine. So we're still experiencing a challenge there, but continuing to work through it, learning new things every week on how to better approach that population.
I know early on you started. I was just going to say, early on, you were an early adopter of releasing Spanish language material, giving people information about COVID-19 and everything like that. Is the situation there distrust of the government or concerns over immigration status or what's leading to the different challenges in reaching that community?
The biggest challenge is that information spreads by word of mouth. And during a pandemic, we weren't encouraging in-person gatherings to be able to share that information. And you know, stations like WPR or local radio station, the news stations, those information sources aren't provided in Spanish. And so while this information, yes, was going out in Spanish, we don't know if it was always reaching those groups. You know, we would share with the schools, but there's not a local, like a Trumbull County news station or newspaper that's in Spanish that we could provide those local details about.
We're visiting with Kayla Baer from the Trumbull County Health Department, whom you've just heard. Also joining us today, John Puglisa from the Houston County Department of Public Health and Human Services, Dr. Aaron Morcom from Mayo Clinic Health System, and Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System. I'm grateful for all of them being here to talk about COVID-19 today and another update on how our various communities in our listening area are responding now that some of the restrictions have started to lift. now that guidance from the CDC is changing and vaccines are pretty widely available. And we're talking about it on Newsmakers. If you've got a question for a future show, an idea you'd like us to think about or find an answer to, you can always get in touch with us. Our email is newsmakers@WPR.org. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about COVID-19. We've been hearing from John Puglisa from Houston County, Minnesota, Kayla Baer from Trempealeau County in Wisconsin, Dr. Aaron Morcom from Mayo Clinic Health System, and Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System. Let's talk about vaccine availability a little bit more specifically, and we'll start across the river in Houston County, Minnesota. John Puglisa is the director of Public Health and Human Services there. John, if somebody in Houston County is interested in a vaccine, I know you said a lot of those people receive medical care over here in La Crosse, but what do they have to do if they're interested in getting a vaccine and they haven't done it yet?
I think consistent with what Dr. Morcom was saying, vaccine is readily available. Early on in the vaccine effort, it was the exact opposite. There was a huge demand and not much supply, and people were very, very eager to get it. And we're fortunate in Houston County. We had really a community, a high level of community support, lots of volunteers who helped with the vaccination effort. And as a result, we've got a relatively high percentage of our community or our county that's been vaccinated, easily in the top 10 counties in the state of Minnesota. So we're proud of that. It was gratifying to work with those folks in the community who really wanted to be part of kind of helping us find a path out of COVID. If people want a vaccine now, there's availability through their primary healthcare providers. We offer appointments. There's just a variety of different places that people can receive a vaccine if they so choose. As others have mentioned, we really encourage vaccines as well, and see that as the single best mitigation strategy there is to help us move past this COVID-19 pandemic.
Dr. Morcom from Mayo Clinic Health System, in terms of availability of vaccines, I was talking with someone whose elderly relative was confused as to why they had to have an appointment to go to a special vaccine clinic and why they couldn't just get it at their regular doctor appointment. Are we still setting up appointments for separate clinics and that kind of thing? Or do you see a day in the future when this might be available from your actual doctor's office, like the flu shot or the pneumonia vaccine or some of these others?
So the reason why it was in the beginning put in and actually currently still is in a specific vaccine center for the COVID vaccine is just the way that the vaccine has to be stored. It's a little bit more volatile than some of the other vaccinations like flu vaccines or other routine vaccinations we give. You really have to make sure the nurses are trained on how to, get it ready for administration to the patient and make sure that it's stored adequately. And so that's why we were doing it in one centralized location. We still are doing it in a centralized location in our old occupational health building, but are working on a plan for the very near future to be able to roll this out to all of our primary care clinics, doing that in a kind of a slow manner. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a little bit more amenable to doing that because it doesn't have quite the strict regulations on storage and all that stuff that the Pfizer and the Moderna ones do more so, particularly Pfizer. But I do think, especially moving into the fall, and if we end up having to do booster doses of the vaccination, that it will being given at the primary care clinics, which we are starting to do a little bit of already.
Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System, is that a similar situation over there? And when might we see COVID vaccines available in a more traditional basis than having to go to a separate location, which may be somewhat inconvenient for some people.
Yeah, no, Dr. Morcom pretty much took the words right out of my mouth. You know, it was, you know, we're kind of just, we were hampered by the same storage issues. Now there is a push from the state of Wisconsin to really start targeting those diverse populations who, you know, might still be on the fence about the vaccine. And really the best people, you know, the best individuals who can, you know, help educate them or potentially, you know, change that. I don't want to say change their minds, but just, provide more education are those primary care providers. And so there is, you know, there is a push behind the scenes now to start moving it out into the primary care clinic. So your pediatrician, you know, into like pediatrics, family medicine, and internal medicine, because that's, I think, where you're really going to start making a difference among those populations.
Now the vaccine is available, as several people have mentioned already, to children as young as 12, I think, right?
Correct.
How long is it? How long do you know how long it's going to take until that is more likely to be available to people younger than that?
You know, we weren't even thinking we were going to be able to vaccinate 12-year-olds until, you know, late into the fall. So already, you know, the scientific community is making, you know, really great advancements with that. I'm hoping in the next couple of months, we'll start seeing that age group drop even lower, that we'll be able to vaccinate at least, you know, under 10. But I think it's still a few months out, but I definitely think we'll see that happen before 2021 is over with.
It was brought up that that some of the increases that we're seeing now or some of the higher levels of infection are among school age populations, kids involved in extracurricular activities and so on. Well, school's about to be out for the summer. And these kids who didn't have any summer programs to go to last year are about to be released into the wild, so to speak. Dr. Morcom, what are the concerns that parents should have as their kids are getting ready to be playing baseball together, going to different kinds of hands-on activities and classes and those kinds of things?
So really the concept of herd immunity comes into play here. So the more people that are vaccinated, the more that the community itself is protected. So if you have a group of kids that are all unvaccinated, obviously they're the most vulnerable. Outdoor activities are a little bit less concerning than things that are indoor. So just maintaining those social distancing things, especially if indoor and if with the populations that are not vaccinated, that is what is going to be the biggest concern with that.
As you look at the people who have been kind of hardest hit by COVID in terms of either patients you've seen or just anecdotal things that you've witnessed in your community, who is it, Dr. Morcom, that you think has been affected the I don't want to say the most. I mean, we know people who have lost loved ones and those kinds of effects. But what parts of our community have been the most impacted by the illness itself?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, everybody in some way or shape or form has been affected, just to different varying degrees and in different aspects. I mean, certainly we had a large amount of our hospitalized population initially, mainly back in like November, December, being elderly individuals and people in nursing homes, those environments. So like health-wise and hospitalization-wise, definitely elderly. But there's younger people that have not, you know, maybe had as severe of disease or even maybe not even had COVID, for sure have been impacted by lots of mental health things. We've seen lots of depression, anxiety issues. I do think kids not having been in school and having social contact, that has somewhat impacted them, as well as, you know, just their ability to learn, especially the highest risk kids that maybe needed a little bit more help in school. That's really been tough on them. And so I do think that is a good point for vaccination for that population, so that we're more safely able to get people back in person and get kids learning in person where that environment is best for them.
Megan, you're an infection preventionist. So this seems like a question that might be really kind of in your wheelhouse. In terms of keeping kids safe as they are unvaccinated for the most part, they are engaging in activities, pools are going to be open, people are going to be engaging in all these things. What should parents be doing to keep the kids safe?
You know, so I kind of want to touch back on the vaccines. There's a really, one of the questions we had when the CDC bumped the limit down to 12 was, well, that's great, but then kids get a lot of vaccines when they come back to school. And if you can't give the vaccines together, that's going to be a really big barrier to vaccinations. And when the CDC, with the CDC's recent update, they did away with that. So kids can get vaccine, you know, their COVID vaccine along with all their routine vaccinations, which was, that was huge. And so I think too, that they'll make parents more, you know, more willing to go get the child vaccinated because it's less visits to the doctor's appointments. Another reason too, to move vaccinations into the hands of pediatricians and family medicine providers. But, you know, outside of that, you know, we know kids tend to be lower risk of, you know, really developing severe COVID, even, you know, moderate COVID illness. But it's still important that, you know, parents are just kind of mindful of who, you know, who their child interacts with. Again, outdoor is going to be the safest. And then just to, you know, monitor their kids for symptoms. And if they do have symptoms, just to go and get them tested, because we also know that the common cold is out there circulating too. So, you know, it's just best to play it safe, get a fast COVID test, and, you know, carry on with your day.
Kayla Baer from Trempealeau County Health Department. In terms of activities available for kids this summer, is anything different in Trempealeau County than other parts of our listening area? Is everything pretty much back to normal in terms of offerings for students over the summertime?
A really good question, Ezra, and I have not been working with the school, so I don't know the answer to that, but I think there are some summer activities resuming. But because not all children are eligible for the vaccine, there will still be safety precautions in place with those activities.
Okay. And what about across the river in Minnesota? What's the situation with the summertime activities for kids as they're getting ready to be out of school in the next week or two?
Kind of similar to Kayla, I don't know the exact plans for, you know, a myriad of different summer activities, but I think as we see a lot of restrictions loosening up, we can anticipate that a lot of things that weren't able to happen last summer will happen this summer. And to Dr. Morcom's point, I think, you know, that interaction that we have with each other, either through recreation or through education, through the workplace, what have you, that's really important to our mental health and certainly for our children. And so I think we're hopeful in Houston County, as with our neighbors, that we're going to see more of a normal summer this year. And I think that'll be good for everyone.
Megan, I had a question, a follow-up question on vaccine availability. As people talk to friends and neighbors who have had the various vaccines that are available, they might develop a personal preference as to which one they get, for good reasons, for ridiculous reasons, for what have you. Is there any ability really for people to choose which vaccine they get at this point?
Gunderson is now leaving that up to the patients, and so we are putting out on social media and on our websites, like what vaccines we do have available. You know, in the past, we weren't doing that because we were really kind of, our hands were tied with what we were receiving from the state health departments. But patients can decide, you know, oh, if let's say Pfizer is going to be offered on this day, I'm going to go walk in to get my vaccine on this day. So they can choose.
What about at Mayo? Is it a similar situation there? How are you handling requests from patients who might prefer one vaccine for some reason or another?
Yep. So similar to what Megan just said that they were doing at Gunderson, we're doing similar at Mayo. In the beginning, same thing. We really had no control over, you know, the supply and which one we were getting. So you really did not get a choice because we mainly had just Pfizer and occasional doses of the Moderna. But now with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, especially after they had the whole safety alert with the cerebral sinus venous thrombosis and the clotting, we are letting people, we obviously have to give people, we have to let them consent to that vaccine and give them the option between the two. So we don't have usually Moderna and Pfizer, we usually have one or the other. So you get a choice between one of the mRNA vaccines and then the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at this point.
Now, you mentioned the issue with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but that was a very small number of instances, right? I mean, by your estimation, that's a safe vaccine for people to be taking, isn't it?
Definitely. So it was an extremely small number of cases in a small cohort of young females. And out of millions of doses that were given, I think there were only like, I can't remember the exact number, but 7-8 cases. It was a very low number. I always tell patients that, you know, there's medicines we give that actually are higher risk for clotting than the COVID vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson. So a good example is birth control pills. Not that we don't want people to be on birth control to prevent pregnancy if that is what's needed, but there's a lot of things we give that actually have a higher risk of clotting than the COVID vaccine. And so it's all risk benefit. And odds are getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you will not have that effect. It's a very effective vaccine. It's a one dose only. So for patients that don't want to have to get two doses, it's an excellent vaccine to get. We have not seen any cases of that here. And everyone that has gotten it has tolerated it for the most part.
It's a very interesting conversation indeed. And we'll continue it in just a moment. In fact, one of the things that comes up all the time as people are talking to friends and neighbors, looking around the internet, doing what a lot of people call as their own research, is finding all these reasons that people come up with not to get vaccinated. And we're gonna answer some of those questions coming up. We'll talk about some of the commonly given reasons that people have not to get the vaccine. And we'll see what our healthcare professionals think about that after this timeout. If you would like to get in touch with the show, listen to a previous episode, maybe, you can find them on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. You can send a message directly to us by emailing newsmakers@wpr.org. This is, as you've heard, Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. Our program today is about COVID-19. Thank you very much for joining us for our conversation. I'm Ezra Wall in our studio on the campus of the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. I'm joined by Dr. Aaron Morecambe from Mayo Clinic Health System, Kayla Baer from the Trempealeau County Health Department, Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System, and John Puglisa from the Houston County Department of Public Health and Human Services. We are talking about COVID-19, especially as the vaccine is now widely available. The various vaccines are now widely available, and more people are starting to get them. Restrictions are being lifted, especially for those with vaccines. They're encouraged to adopt a more normal, more comfortable way of life, and that all seems to be headed in the right direction. But some of the common things that come up are these reasons that people either are hesitant about the vaccines because of how quickly they were brought to the market, and other different reasons why they might not like to get them. So I think I'm going to pose a couple of questions that we commonly hear. And let's start with Dr. Morecambe, whom we heard ending the last segment. Dr. Morecambe, one of the things that we hear a lot is, why should I get vaccinated? Somebody, particularly we hear this among maybe young adults, why should I get vaccinated against something that's not likely to have much effect on me and from which like 99% of people recover?
So similar to what I had said earlier, this really comes down to the herd immunity thing, and really thinking more of at a population or community standpoint. So yes, being younger does put you in the lower risk category, but you never really know who you could come into contact with that might be higher risk. Also, we've had young patients that maybe don't know some of the underlying conditions that they have that put them at higher risk. And so just because you are young doesn't mean you couldn't end up with a severe case. It's less likely, but the vaccine is very safe. It's very effective. And thinking about it more to protect the whole community and others around you so that you don't spread things to them is really the way to think about it.
John Puglisa from Houston County, what objections have you heard from people in your talking to either members of the public or folks that you've interacted with in terms of why people decide not to get vaccinated?
I suppose like anybody on this panel, I've heard all kinds of reasons. Certainly the pace at which these were brought to implementation gets some people concerned. And there are certain other things that kind of go more outlandish in the concern. I think the thing that's important and kind of what we're seeing is needing to remind ourselves that there's nothing wrong with asking questions. There's nothing wrong with caution. And I think COVID has heightened emotions on so many levels. And so it's really easy to make somebody wrong if they question something that you believe strongly should happen. But making them wrong isn't going to probably move them any closer to vaccination. I think what we do with our staff, what we do is trying to say, you know, listen, everybody's got a story. My story is my mom was a polio survivor. And so that colors my view of vaccination. She contracted polio just before there were available vaccines for it. And it changed the trajectory of her life. And that was something that was, you know, commonly discussed in my family. So that's part of my story. And my view of that, and even just having that in my family, I have a familiarity with some of the history of the polio vaccine that is, it has helped me in some of the decision making I've made for myself personally and for my family. But we all have a story, and there's nothing wrong with asking questions. There's nothing wrong with caution. I hope we can move to a time when we can have those discussions in less emotionally charged environments that, you know, lead to constructive outcomes.
You raise a really important point because, you know, we are in an era of public discourse where a lot of people point out that it seems like people who don't think the same way that you might are necessarily your enemies, and you treat them that way in postings online and in conversations with others and so on. But really, I mean, at least in the United States, we're kind of known for all having a pretty fierce independent streak. And if somebody asks a question or you know, is skeptical about an answer from somebody, it seems like that's just kind of something we've inherited from generation after generation of the people who settled this country initially. So, in terms of reaching the public, Kayla, you're a public information officer in Trempealeau County. That's what you do. Talk about what strategies you employ to ease the concerns of people who might not be ready to get the vaccine just yet.
Our main focus has been consistent messaging on where to get accurate information. We know people are going to do their own research, so if we can help provide some reliable sources of information for them to do their research, that's going to be, you know, the way that we can help people make an informed decision for themselves whether or not to get the vaccine. And we always encourage people to give us a call, leave a message, send us a message on Facebook, or talk to your healthcare provider when you do have questions about this. You know, we're here to meet people where they're at, kind of like what John was saying. And in my normal non-COVID job, I'm a WIC director. I counsel patients day to day. So that's what you need to do to effectively build relationships and communicate with people, is meet them where they're at and don't provide judgment with that conversation. Just be there to help and support them so they can make an informed decision.
Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System. Kayla just mentioned people making informed decisions. I know a lot of people who believe that's what they're doing because they've spent hours and hours reading, listening, watching different resources that are available to them that are giving them the information that they now believe in about the efficacy or safety of COVID vaccines. How can people tell when they are consuming reputable resources?
I always go back to that the CDC is, you know, really one of the most, to me, the most trusted, you know, news sources. State health departments too, I think, resonate almost more with communities than the CDC because it's your state, you know, it's your community. So I always reference back to those as well, you know, in local health departments. You know, we all try to really reinforce the same message. So whether it's the healthcare system, the local health department, state, we all try to, you know, make sure that we're consistent. So those are always going to be really strong and valid resources to follow.
Dr. Morecambe, what about some these people who have concerns about, really, they might consider it all fruit from the poisonous tree. I mean, the very fact, like Megan just mentioned, the unified message of the healthcare community, but that's the very fact that some detractors use as ammunition to disregard the whole thing. They say, oh, of course, they've got their story in order, that big pharma handed down from on high, or, you know, big medicine or big government or whatever you want. How can you talk to someone who is so convinced that there's some dark hidden force at work?
Yeah, so we've heard, and I'm sure everyone else on this call as well has heard just about every single reason for not getting the vaccine. So it's going to change my DNA, or a big one is it's gone through too quickly, that I'm worried about the safety. We can't find a cure for cancer. That's been around forever. How can we find a cure for COVID? All those kind of things. I really just try to talk to patients about what their concern is about the vaccine, and then really try to provide strong education around that, and talking to people about their points of view. And I think, similar to what Kayla was saying, just really trying to be open and non-judgmental. I mean, we're not on a different team than the patient. We're on the same team and just want what's best for them. I try to tell them about, you know, if it's a patient that has got a lot of medical problems, how worried we would be about them if they got COVID, and just really tailoring that and personalized to the patient. Similar to what Megan said, I do think primary care is in a very good position to help with getting patients vaccinated, because we are in a position where we have long-term relationships with our patients. And sometimes those patients that are really resistant to things, because they trust you as your their primary care provider, and you know that you've seen them long over the long haul, you sometimes can get them to agree to things and kind of meet them right where they're at.
What are some of the concerns that you have over the new variants of COVID-19 that come up?
So, I mean, COVID-19 is a virus. Viruses mutate or that turn into different variants. That's, you know, the influenza is the perfect example. Obviously, that one has several mutations. That's why we have a different flu vaccine, or target that to the more common influenza variants that we've had over the past year. With COVID, the variants that we've seen thus far, I don't believe have been enough that the vaccines are not, for the most part, continue to be very effective against them. If there's variants or mutations in parts of the COVID vaccine that is not the part that is targeted, that the vaccine targets the immune system to make a response, then it's still, you still make a good immune response to it. So thus far, the vaccine is, we believe, covering those variants very well. No, the Johnson & Johnson one was one that was studied to cover the variants that we have seen thus far. But with any virus, that's a concern, that there may be some mutation of that can happen over time, and we possibly may need booster shots in upcoming seasons. To be determined.
Do you think, I mean, they release a different version of the flu vaccine every single year, and some years is more effective than others as they go through the very scientific but still, you know, educated guess as to which strain of the flu is going to be the most prevalent. Do you see a future like that for COVID-19?
Potentially. I guess it all depends on if COVID-19 behaves like other viruses that mutate to the extent of influenza. And I don't know, we just haven't had COVID-19 around long enough to see in the long term if it's going to be something that mutates to enough extent that the current vaccines don't cover. Personally, I think we probably will need to have booster shots. I don't know if that's going to be yearly like influenza, or if it's going to be every 2 years, every 5 years. I don't know that anybody knows that, just because the vaccines haven't been out long enough to be able to study all of that.
That's the next thing I wanted to ask about, and I'm glad you mentioned it. Megan, let's get your input on this idea of boosters. It's been, let's see, since several months now, since frontline healthcare workers, the elderly among us, and some others started getting the very first vaccines that were available in our area. How soon might these people need to get a booster or would they get just another round of the vaccine, or how long is it going to be effective for them?
You know, I think that still remains to be seen. It looks like right now, from even the cases that are coming through, that those people who are vaccinated, you know, that we're not seeing, again, a high number of vaccinated individuals getting COVID, suggesting that, again, you know, the, whether you, you know, even if you had the vaccine back in December, or late December, early January, that you're still incredibly well protected against these new variants that are out and circulating. So I think, you know, boosters would be given, you know, right around the same time for everyone, you know, maybe that 1 year out, if that's even possible. That's another reason too, why we really want to push vaccinations, because variants are going to keep popping up the more that you have, you know, when you have higher COVID spread transmission throughout the community. So if you can really bring that transmission level down, you're going to bring the chance of more variants developing down as well.
So as we look forward to a summer of increasing vaccination numbers, lessening restrictions, more availability of public spaces, restaurants, festivals, those kinds of things going forward. I'm putting you on the spot here because I know you're all medical / healthcare related professionals, and this is kind of off the beaten path. But as you look forward to summer, is there something in your community or something that you haven't been able to participate in the last year or so that you're eager to get back to? John, I was just thinking about Applefest the other day. I'm eager for Applefest. What are you looking forward to this year?
You know, I'm relatively new to the area. I moved here about 5 years ago, and I've really, really enjoyed getting to know some of these communities and things like Applefest and the different festivals and things in the region. Also, just really fun to go to different communities, find a restaurant or different things, different shops and such. And getting to meet people in this region has been really, really exciting and fun. And I know my wife and I really missed that last summer. That's something that's a big part of what we do.
Kayla Bear from Trempealeau County, what are you looking forward to now that some of these restrictions and advice from the CDC are changing?
I'm looking forward to having an in-person baby shower, because last year I attended a lot of virtual showers for family, and I'm excited to be expecting my first baby and looking forward to seeing my vaccinated friends and family in person for an in-person shower.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on that for sure.
Thank you.
That's going to be very exciting. Dr. Morcom from Mayo Clinic Health System, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward just to being able to get together with friends and family more. During the pandemic, I think that affected everybody, not being able to see their loved ones as much as they would maybe like. I have a fairly big extended family, and so not being able to have family reunions and holidays and things like that was kind of sad, not being able to see grandparents and things. But now that people are vaccinated, you feel a little safer getting together, and I'm just looking forward to that. I'm also from La Crescent, so Applefest is pretty cool.
There we go.
Go Houston County.
Megan Meller from Gunderson Health System. In terms of getting back to what you referred to as the new normal earlier, what are you excited about this summer?
Seeing friends and family again. All my immediate family and close friends are now vaccinated. So having my mom over for Mother's Day weekend was just such a good feeling. And then another thing too is we have a big family vacation coming up where we're flying out to Maine. So it's my first trip in a year and a half, and I'm super excited for it.
That sounds wonderful. As for me, I have a younger cousin who's getting married in June, and that'll be kind of the first big to-do for our family in quite some time. So that'll be a lot of fun. I want to extend my thanks to all of you for joining us. I really appreciate it. Megan Meller is an infection preventionist at Gunderson Health System. Megan, thank you for being on Newsmakers today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Aaron Morcom is a family medicine physician at Mayo Clinic Health System. Dr. Morcom, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ezra.
John Puglisa is the Director of Public Health and Human Services for Houston County, Minnesota. John, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you too, Ezra. My pleasure.
Kay LaBaire is with the Trempealeau County Department of Health. Kayla, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thanks for including me in this conversation, Ezra.
Absolutely. There are a few opportunities each week to listen to our show, two of them on the air and one online. You can catch our show originally 10 a.m. on Fridays on the Ideas Network 90.3. You can catch the repeat at 7 p.m. on Friday on 88.9. That's NPR News and Music 88.9 in La Crosse. Of course, you can find the show always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. The show is produced by Dawn Jewell and John Davis. Thanks to the rest of the La Crosse staff, I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.